as long as the Titans pick within the first 11 to 14 picks in this draft, it's going to take them going wildly off the board, off script, to make me mad. Welcome into the Hot Read Podcast for a Tuesday evening, April the 23rd. I'm your host, Easton Freeze, director of published content here at BroadwaySportsMedia.com. We're also brought to you by the 440 Podcast Network. You can follow me on social media at Easton Freeze. I am solo today. No producer, JT. Draft season got him. He is under the weather, but recovering, and I'm sure watching somewhere in the shadows. So hello, JT. He's texting me right now. It's off. My microphone is off. So you know what? We're going to fix that right now. This is what happens when I'm lacking a producer. The thing falls apart. Give me 10 seconds and I'll be right back. I'm alone today. JT's under the weather. He is hopefully going to be feeling better before perfect. And he lets me know via text that things are better. So we're better. Thanks for dealing with my technical difficulties, guys. Today's show, now that we are underway and officially functioning here on the Hot Read Podcast. Thank you, Jill, in the comments. Yes, better. We got a couple of things to talk about, and this is our last live show before we are live during the NFL draft on Thursday and Friday night. JT is resting now to get better for Thursday night when we kick off our NFL draft live here on the Hot Read Podcast. JT and I will be watching the first round along with you guys wherever you're watching this right now, on YouTube, on Twitter, on Facebook. We will be live there with you, reacting to the entirety of the first round on Thursday night and then the entirety of rounds 2 and 3 on Friday night as well. It's going to be a great time. Speaking of time, we are a little bit later today than usual. I can't remember the last time we had a primetime show like this, but today was a crazy one for me, and I'm self-producing the show, and just things got out of whack. But you know what? I said we're going to do a show on Tuesday. Here we are on Tuesday. We're doing a show. We're getting it done. Not going to let the last episode before the draft go scuttled just because some things changed. We adapt, and we are here. We've got some important things to talk through. We, of course, saw the Titans brass today. Chad Brinker, Ryan Carthon, and Brian Callahan all spoke. I was in attendance at St. Thomas Sports Park. The Titans brass went through a pre-draft press conference in which they did not tell us much, but they did drop a couple of little nuggets in there that I want to discuss. Then I'm going to get to kind of my final address of the draft, my final predictions for what the Titans are going to do in this draft before we actually get there. And then mock draft 2.0, going through a mock draft that is certainly one of the most unique mock drafts I guarantee you have seen. I'll explain why that is in a little bit, but the entirety of the first round and then the 7 round Titans mock draft, my final prediction for what the Titans haul will look like. So a lot to get to. If you are with us live, I appreciate you being here. Do me a favor and make sure you're over on Broadway Sports Media's YouTube page. Find this live stream there. And in the comment section, you can join producer JT and Jill and Derek in today's conversation. I don't have a co-host with me, so if you want to chat along and keep me company, that would be greatly appreciated. While you're there, make sure you hit subscribe, hit like, all those things to help us with the algorithm. And then if you can hit retweet, hit like on Twitter and all those things, as much as you can help us share the show, that is always appreciated. Now, a couple of thoughts, and not many, honestly, on what we heard from Ryan Carthon, Chad Brinker, and Brian Callahan at today's presser. Let's start with Chad Brinker, because that's where the afternoon started. We walk into the press room at St. Thomas Sports Park, and there's a table set up with two mics and a podium beside it. And who's come? What's this for? Podium's for Chad Brinker, I'm told. He's going to give a prepared statement beforehand, and then there'll be questions for Ryan Carthon and Brian Callahan. Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, I mean, assistant GM, Chad Brinker, he's a part of the process. Clearly, he has something to say. So he comes in, and he gives like a three and a half minute long prepared statement about the draft process and thanking the scouts and all of these things. It's 3 minutes, but it doesn't really say a whole lot. And then he says, I'm going to turn it over to Brian and Ran, and they're going to take any questions you guys have. And then he walks off into the sunset. Kind of strange on the surface. To me, really all it signals is kind of who's in charge here. And that's not to say that Ran Carthon is not in charge. But in terms of the draft in particular, the message that it sent to me, and maybe this isn't the message it was meant to send, but genuinely talking to other guys in the media pool afterwards, trying to figure out what exactly that was, we couldn't come to any better conclusion than, hey, we're establishing the fact that Chad Brinker is very, very, very much a part of this draft process, very involved in the Titans selections, and may very well be the guy at the stern of the ship when it comes to steering the picks that they make. He's over the analytics, the Titans' new and bolstered analytics department, and he's overseeing a lot of that in the draft process. So it makes a good amount of sense to me that he would be heavily involved, if not the lead guy, on making these decisions. Now, that's not a power play situation. I was listening with some of the guys in the media room to one of our favorite radio stations, nothing against the station, favorite radio shows in town, trying to make more of this than I think it really is, this idea that, well, there is a power dynamic, power struggle here, and Chad Brinker clearly has usurped Rand Carthon in terms of power in the draft decision-making process. I think that's really silly. The idea that this is not a situation, assuming that I'm right, that Chad Brinker is the guy pulling the strings here in a big way, there's no reason to believe that's not something that was arranged by Rand Carthon, deferring to the guy that he wants to be the point guy on these decisions, and who is doing nothing but the football side of things, not doing ops, not doing managerial, not having managerial duties. Like, he's doing analytics, going through prospects, handling scouts, doing football all the time. So again, it makes sense for him to be a large part of, and Derek has guessed it. Yes, it's Stillman. It makes sense that he is a large part, if not the main guy, in this process. So that's kind of what that signaled to me. A number of questions for Brian and Rand followed, a lot of non-answers, as you'd expect, less than 72 hours away from the first picks being made. But a couple of things, they did confirm that the big board is finished. They are still tweaking some things, but generally speaking, it is done. Did not say how large that board is, not shocking. They were asked, Rand and Brian, about what a blue chip player is to them. And the way that Rand defined it, I think, is a good one, pointing out that a blue chip player for him is a guy you turn on the tape, any tape, and he pops off the screen immediately. He's not a guy where you have to say, "Did you watch that guy? Oh, but did you watch the Houston game though? Oh, did you watch when they played West Virginia?" No, it's a guy you turned on any of his games essentially in college, and immediately, boom, it's consistent. There's no doubt this is a football player that's going to work at the next level. That's what a blue chip guy is. So that's worth keeping in mind as they look to secure one of those blue chip guys at the top of the draft. They were asked about potentially getting back into the third round, and Rand re-emphasized, as he has a handful of times this offseason, hey, you know, you got to have a partner to dance with, or else you can't hit the floor. Like, you can't move in the draft unless there is somebody who is going to make that, to help facilitate that move with you. And that's something that, I get the impression, we'll talk about this in a little bit more in a second, when I go through what I think I know about this draft and what I think I know about the Titans right now. That's something that I think they are interested in doing, only having two top 100 picks and needing more, really, like, just in order to bolster their roster as best they can. Turning one or both of those first and second round picks into more picks would be ideal, and I think they share that sentiment, so that is something to keep in mind. What else do they talk about here? Rand Carthon was asked about NIL, you know, depleting the depth in the draft, whether or not that's an overblown narrative. He agrees. He said that, yes, I think that he said that we used to joke with prospects like, hey, coming to the NFL, now you're taking a pay cut, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, because, you know, all the, you know, the sack lunch money they were getting under the table and the accusations there that were, like, you know, not so well kept a secret. He said, well, now they really are, some of these guys leaving college to take a pay cut because they were making more money in college. And so he says he does not blame one bit guys that want to go back to school for a little more coin the extra year. They're going to make more in school than in the NFL. He says that the day three depth has been impacted by that. They went through what they've gone through a handful of times, the way that their board works horizontally and vertically, which was in the context of a question asking if you're trying to decide between two prospects, one slightly graded higher, one slightly graded lower, but the lower graded player is at a position of much more significant need. How do you differentiate between those two, and what ultimately guides your process on that decision? And he kind of sidestepped that question by essentially saying, hey, we build it horizontally and vertically. So when we get to a certain point, oftentimes there are 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys linearly, horizontally, that are ranked the same or essentially the same. And they are vertically positioned by their position group. And so when you get to that position, the concept is, okay, well, these guys are all graded the same. So then let's address the position we think is of greatest need here. And that allows you to kill two birds with one stone, have that even balance of drafting for need and drafting for value. Now, how often that happens, I don't know. And how finely tuned the grading system on that board is, I also don't know, because that's really what goes into it, right? Like, if these guys are round number grades, 1 through 100, then you're going to have guys that are the same. But, it, you know, if they're doing grades like most analysts grade prospects, where this guy's a 6.71 or whatever, there ultimately is a guy that is going to be graded higher than the other. Now, they may be marginal, and they may have rule. I'd imagine in the room they have rules to dictate, you know, when it's this marginal, we're gonna address it from a positional standpoint. And this is the distance. This is the difference between guys that we're looking for in order to say pure value. This guy is better. I don't care what position he plays. We're never going to know those things. But that's something that I find interesting about the way that they handled their board. They were asked about tackles. And when you specifically tackles, when you're evaluating the linemen, trying to decide where these big guys are best fit to play in the NFL position wise. How do you determine whether a tackle can switch from right to left or is going to work better on the left side than the right? And they said that there are certainly some guys in this class they see as one side only. But, and this was an answer from Brian Callahan, he essentially said, most of these guys we think have versatility. And in the modern, and this is a lot of stuff we've been saying on this show for months now, a lot of these guys in the NFL have in college coming into the NFL have the versatility to play either side. They're being cross-trained from an early age. And more importantly, in the modern NFL, you aren't seeing premier pass rushers lined up on the left side as often and as consistently as it was in the past, right? The idea of attacking the quarterback, the righty quarterback's blind spot consistently as a defense with your best rusher up against the left tackle. You're often seeing some of the best rushers play on the right side because offenses haven't necessarily caught up and the lesser tackle is the right tackle. And so instead of worrying about the blind side, the best rusher goes and plays against the worst tackle to get home more often, even if the quarterback sees him coming. Like, that's the direction the league is going in. And that's what was ultimately parroted by Brian Callahan saying, listen, guys, these guys are trained early playing left and right. And some of them may not be able to do it, but a number of them do. And what's most important is having a solid tackle, whether he is on the right or the left side. Ultimately, this team needs one of them, and they don't have either of them at the moment. Do they have better break glass in case of emergency fail safes on the right side on the roster already? Yes, they do. But are they good? I don't think you can say that. And so while left tackle remains a higher need for the Titans, I do think it is being overblown and overlooked, this idea that they couldn't consider a right tackle, which we'll get to in a little bit when we get to mock draft 2.0. Just a couple of more things from this press conference. I asked them about the GPS data and how much that weighs on their pre-draft evaluation on guys in the particular context of if a prospect can't do the athletic testing during the combine, can't perform at the Senior Bowl, can't do the track measurement benchmarks they're looking for these guys to make scouting reports and build a board analytically. How does the GPS data affect that? Like, ultimately asking, if you've got GPS data on a guy, does it matter whether or not he goes and tests? Does it matter whether or not he opts out of testing? And can not testing hurt a guy if you're confident you see an athlete on tape and that's matched by the GPS numbers? And Rand Carthen fielded that question from me, essentially saying, the GPS data we have to cross-check, because he did point out there are some schools you get the GPS data and you're like, oh, would you look at that? 7 other guys ran at 23 miles per hour top speed this year. Bogus, bunk. There's no way. So it may not all be gospel truth, and they do want to verify a lot of these guys. But, you know, and this was the interesting thing about this answer. He says, I know who you're referring to, and gives me a look. I'm imagining he thinks I'm referencing Marvin Harrison Jr. Now, I didn't ask the question referencing any guy in particular. I could have technically been referencing a handful of guys. I could have been referencing Brock Bowers, for example. But I'd imagine he thinks I was referencing Marvin. And the vibe on the answer in regard to assuming it was Marvin he was talking about, it, the GPS and the tape is what we rely upon most of all. And when we are confident in what we see on that front, not doing the athletic testing isn't necessarily a deal breaker. It's not going to hurt a guy too badly. So that was his answer on that. Anything else here? Oh, one last thing. And this is going to lead us into the next segment of the show here. Early on in the presser, I think it was Sean Davenport who asked Rand Carthon whether or not there were any players on their board that they consider untrade-downable, guys that they would not move off of their spot at seven should they be available to the Titans. And Rand's answer was, and I quote, short answer, yes, and a smile, and moving on. Now, that leads us to our next segment here, where I want to essentially play a game of I think, I feel, I know, which is something that I don't know if it was, I'm imagining it wasn't coined by Braden Gall, my friend and colleague here on the 440 Sports Podcast Network. If it was, I apologize. It's where I got it from. So Braden and Zach do this on occasion on a football show on Mondays and Thursdays. And I'm going to borrow the concept, borrow the game, because it's the perfect way for me to unload the bag on what I think and feel and know about this draft and what the Titans are going to do. It's essentially my final address after the last 30 episodes of the Hot Read Podcast and 3.5 months of draft content. Here's my ultimate prediction and statement on what the Titans are going to do. And again, with I think, I feel, I know, if you're new around here, I think is the least confident. It is something that is like a gut feeling. You don't necessarily have anything to go based off of. You're not even necessarily reading the tea leaves, but it's what you think this team's going to do. It's the vibe you're getting. I feel is reading the tea leaves. You don't have hard evidence of it, but based on certain things you have seen or heard, this is what you feel they're going to do. And then I know are things that I have reason to believe, whether or not I can share them publicly. I have firm sourced reasons to believe this is the case. So I think, I feel, I know. And here are the statements that I want to make. First of all, I know that the Tennessee Titans are interested in trading back if they are presented the opportunity in the first round. I know that. I also know that there is at least one player they would not trade off of on their board. I know that because Rand Carthon said it explicitly today. I feel that that player is Marvin Harrison Jr. and or Malik Nabers. I feel it's one of those top two receivers. I think they won't end up moving off of seven ultimately, even if they want to. And I'll get to more on that in just a second. I'll explain why I think they won't move off of seven ultimately on Thursday night. I know that there is smoke on Malik Nabers from a personality and behavior standpoint that is problematic. And I wonder if it's enough for the Titans to care. Now, some of this stuff is coming to light recently, and it's the kind of thing that I'm not, there's a reason why I said I know that there is smoke, not that I know there are these problems. It's the kind of thing that I'm not going to hold against the guy. And if he becomes a Titan in a couple of days and I'm talking to him in a press conference on Friday, I would like to start building that relationship and find out for myself. I'm not making that judgment because it's based on things that I've heard second, third, fourth hand. But I know there is smoke on it. And often where there is smoke, there is fire. I feel that if they stay at seven, presuming Marvin Harrison Jr. goes in the first six picks, which I think is likely to happen, they will draft Malik Nabers or Joe Alt at the seventh overall pick in that order. I think that's their preference at seven. Malik Nabers, Joe Alt. And that's if they stay and don't trade. I think their board ultimately looks like Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Joe Alt, and then some order of Olufashinu, J.C. Latham, and Roma Dunze. I don't know what order, but I think those are their top six guys. Marvin Harrison Jr. at the top, then Malik Nabers, Joe Alt, and then some combination of Olufashinu, J.C. Latham, and Roma Dunze. I think that is what their board ultimately looks like at this point. Now, let's get back to that I think they won't be moving off of seven even if they want to. And here's where you're going to have to follow me because this gets a little bit complicated, but I have been sitting at my desk today for 3 or 4 hours, parsing this out, thinking about all the possibilities, diving into the multiversal possibilities that the Titans could potentially be taking on Thursday, the routes that they could be taking. And here's the bottom line. If you believe that Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison Jr. are players that the Titans would not trade down from at seven, which I do, that means that a trade down would require the following things. One, you got to have two of the first six picks be Nabers and Harrison, because if not, one of them will be there and the Titans would not move off. They would draft the guy. That's the belief. That's possible. Very possible that those two guys are gone by seven. So you have to have that happen. And then one of the top four quarterbacks pretty much needs to fall to seven, and there needs to be a team that wants to trade up to seven for that quarterback. And that's, I say probably that's the case, because the only way that this is possible for them to move off of seven and the top four quarterbacks all go in the first six picks, as well as Harrison and Nabers, and the Titans still move, is going to require there to be a team that is willing to trade up to seven for a non-quarterback, for one of these top tackles, for a top defender, for one of the top receivers. And by top receivers, actually, I just mean Roma Dunze, because again, the top two need to be gone in that instance. So I know that's kind of complicated, but like those two things have to happen for them to get a trade down, which is why I think it's unlikely. Two of the first six picks need to be Harrison and Nabers, because I don't think that they would trade out of seven if they could pick one of those guys. And then you either need one of the top four quarterbacks to fall to seven and there to be a team that wants to come up to get them, or if there to be a team surprisingly willing to trade to seven for a non-quarterback, for Roma Dunze or a top defender or a top tackle. And when you walk through the potential trades, the trade partners in particular, on seven, you constantly run into a lack of capital or a lack of incentive, or a team that's too far down for the Titans to want to move, or a conflict of interest, like a team within your division. I don't think the Titans are going to move off of 7 to 17 for the Jaguars to come up and take Roma Dunze at 7. Like, I don't think that's the kind of thing that they're in the business of doing. So it gets tricky. And that's why, ultimately, if I had to guess today, I don't think it's likely for them to move off of 7. I'd be just, it'd make me so happy in my heart for them to prove me wrong, for them to move off of 7, to trade down. I've been very vocal this entire time about how moving off of 7 is in the best interest of the Titans. It is what I want them to do so very badly. But if I'm being honest, and I've sat here for hours today playing through all of the scenarios, it's going to take a lot of things happening, in my opinion, for them to get to move down to where they want to be and not move down with, the Bills to 28 or something and really change the entire landscape of their draft. But the bottom line is this: before we get to my mock draft 2.0, my last thought on their draft is this. As long as the Titans pick within the first 11 to 14 picks in this draft, it's going to take them going wildly off the board, off script, to make me mad. There are so many paths that lead to pretty pleasing outcomes, as opposed to frustrating ones, because it's because of how much I love their options at the top of this class. That's ultimately the reality here. I think they have so many options that are promising. They're different. It's a choose your own adventure situation. The Titans have to make the first step, but I think most of the things they could do, as long as they don't trade way down the board, and as long as they don't go way off script and draft somebody that is not a consensus top 13, 14 pick, I don't see a world in which they make me or most of their fans all that unhappy on night one. And that's a really great place to be as a fan. It's a really great place to be as an analyst, because I like talking about happy things, not sad things. And I think that the Titans faithful are going to be pretty pleased after Thursday, no matter what happens. Here's to them making the right decision. Now, let's get into one of the most unhinged things I will ever put on the Hot Read podcast. Let me explain why it's going to be so unhinged. For a couple of weeks now, I've had scheduled here the last episode to be Mock Draft 2.0, going through my second iteration of my first round mock and seven round Titans mock, explaining where I think guys are going to go and why. And I sat down today. I pulled up my Mock Draft 1.0 from 3 weeks ago, three, 4 weeks ago. And, I was just going to edit off of that and stick with things I think I still like and change some things I didn't and just modify that for today's purposes. And then an hour passed and I hadn't really made much progress and my brain had started to turn to pudding. And I realized that the nature of this draft is such that it is so unpredictable and has such a high percentage chance of getting off the rails pretty early based on some really, really high leverage decisions being made by teams in the top 10 that are going to shape the entire first round of this draft, that narrowing down the most likely situation was just too much for me to bear. And while I just spent the last 15, 20 minutes explaining to you why I think the Titans won't be moving off the seventh pick, I wanted to have them move off the seventh pick here because it's what I want them to do. And it's not what in the first mock, I had them stick at seven. So I wanted to change it up here. And so what ultimately this mock became was the what if mock. It became the fairy tale mock. It became the, this is going to look on the surface to you all like the most unrealistic wish casting you've ever seen, not just for the Titans, but for many of these teams. And there's some truth to that, but I want you to walk with me here. Trust me here. This is less a Easton is predicting this is what will happen. All of these things will happen in this order, and more a, I took all of the things that I genuinely think, individual instances of things that I genuinely think on Thursday night could happen. And I have reason to believe they'll happen. And I'll explain in a second. And I put them all into one mock. So essentially I took all of the weird things we could see on Thursday and combined it into one, as an exercise in us going through and explaining some of the things that could happen. Again, they're not all going to happen, but I think some of them will. And with that, let's pull up my mock draft 1.0 here. And oh, great. It had decommitted there. Had to bring it back in. Here's the first five picks in my mock draft 1.0. And if you are looking, watching with us on YouTube, you're going to realize already things are a little bit different than you may have expected. Not at the top, of course, Caleb Williams going to the Bears. No shock there. I've still got Drake May going to the Commanders. I had him going there in mock draft 1.0. I don't see them making this decision for Jay. Let me take that back. I can see them making this decision to take Jaden Daniels at the second pick. I'm not buying it. It's never passed the smell test for me. I think the NFL, like this idea that the NFL is actually not that high on Drake. He's the second best quarterback in this class for me, and it's not really close. I think there's plenty of folks in the NFL that like him a lot. And I think the Commanders are a team with Adam Peters at the reins as their new GM that would be willing to do what we've seen. Because what have you heard so far? Every single national analyst, every single national insider has been very, very aggressive with how confident they are on these shows saying, I've not heard anything to indicate that the Washington Commanders are interested in anybody but Jaden Daniels. I've heard that it is Jaden Daniels. It's all but decided. And then they had their Topgolf event a week ago. That's kind of strange. They're inviting everybody. And then Jaden Daniels has an whole thing with his agent. And it sounds like he's not super happy about the way that it went. He wanted more FaceTime. And oh, suddenly he's interested in potentially going to other teams. It's weird. It's a weird situation. And I don't think it'd be weird like this if Jaden Daniels was for sure the pick. I also don't see Adam Peters as the kind of guy that's going to tip his hand just to tip his hand. So I'm going to go with that's the draft day surprise the first draft day surprise, and that Drake May is the pick for Washington. In that case, I think the guy that was pretty explicitly hinted at very, very early on in the draft process as being pretty high on the early draft board for the New England Patriots, Jaden Daniels out of LSU, to go to New England. I think they feel pretty convicted up there. The Hunt family reportedly much more heavily involved in this process this year, now that Bill Belichick is gone. I think it's reasonable for them to be wanting a quarterback of the future and wanting to take advantage of their position in this draft, a draft in which there are four very good quarterbacks to draft from. Then at number four, the Vikings make their move. They trade up with Arizona. Arizona trades out of four. Monty Austin Hort starts the wheeling and dealing. He moves down, and it is a first round swap only. The Vikings move up to four, and the Cardinals move back and take number 11 and number 23, Minnesota's two first round picks. Now, I'm not necessarily saying I think this is going to happen. In fact, I said earlier today to some friends that I was talking to, I'm starting to, with every passing day, I am worried that Minnesota may not get this done. I am worried that they may not have a trade partner, and this work that they did early in the draft process to best position themselves to be the team that comes up and gets the quarterback may be for naught. And there's already some messaging out there today. I saw somebody saying, well, you know, if it's the fourth quarterback and it's JJ McCarthy available, The Vikings organization is actually reportedly willing to stick at 11-23 and use one of those picks on either a Bo Nix or a Michael Penix as their consolation, not wanting to spend too much to move up for a J.J. McCarthy. Maybe that's the case. But at this point in the game, that is not coming out for no reason. When you hear leaks like this in the NFL, you must always ask yourself, who would want this out? And why would they want it out? And why would they want it out now? And that's exactly the kind of thing that a team who is starting to realize, dadgummit, we may not have, we may fail on this mission to get our quarterback. This is some cope. This is some damage control. That's what it reads like to me. Now, I don't think they're actually out on a J.J. McCarthy. And in this instance, obviously, I had them moving up with Arizona to 4 to go and get their guy. I actually think it may be the best of the quarterback needy teams. I think it's the best situation for a J.J. to land in because he can come in and kind of do the Kirk Cousins thing out of the gate. He can't do much more than that, but he can kind of do that same thing and they can try to build him, grow him from there. And then the most interesting pick in my first five here, it's J.C. Latham going to the Chargers. Now, I don't necessarily think the Chargers are going to take him at 5. I think there's a world in which they're the partner for the Vikings who moved to 5. The Chargers move back to 11-23, and they take J.C. Latham at 23 if he's there. But this idea that, you know, Joe Alt could be the first tackle off the board and he could go to the Chargers, I don't think that's nearly as likely as a J.C. Latham going to the Chargers for a couple of reasons. One, I don't see Joe Alt as the kind of guy they're looking for. In fact, he's a left tackle who I think is talented enough to play either side, but they're not in need of left tackle. They've got Rashawn Slater. They are set at that position. They do badly need a right tackle, and that is what J.C. Latham naturally played in college. I think both Latham and Alt are capable of switching sides. Don't get me wrong, but I think that a J.C. Latham would fit that positional need immediately, and I think he's the kind of road grading power style tackle that a Jim Harbaugh's offense in particular is going to want to run, pound the rock, run behind the big body, out physical your opponent and pound these running schemes until the cows come home. That's the kind of guy that I think a J.C. Latham, much bigger body, a much stronger player, not quite as great in the footwork department as Joe Alt, but has some upper hands on him in that way. I think J.C. Latham could be the guy for the Chargers at 5 or at 11, wherever they end up picking. Okay, now on to the next 5 picks. And here's where things start to get very interesting. Let's start at the top. The New York Giants have Marvin Harrison Jr. fall into their laps just like that. A surprise top 5 candidate in J.C. Latham pushes him down the board. And the Giants land Marvin Harrison Jr., a player that can play inside, a player that can play outside, a guy that they need very, very badly in their wide receiver room, a sure thing, a number one receiver, a dependable, reliable, week in, week out, snap in, snap out guy that you can go to in a pinch. So they are very, very pleased by that. A good thing happens to the Giants fan base. They've needed it. Then the Cardinals, Monty Austin Ford, pulling the full Monty, wheeling and dealing in 2023 draft fashion where they moved down and then back up for Paris Johnson Jr. He does the same thing. So Monty moves from 4 with the Vikings down to 11-23. And then the Cardinals trade back up with the Tennessee Titans at 7 because they want a star receiver for Kyler Murray to be able to pass the ball to. And they trade 7 and 11 with the Titans. So the Titans move back to 11. The Titans also acquire some day 2 capital that they so badly need. So they pick up 66 overall, a top of the third round pick, and 90 overall, a back of the third round pick. If you're wanting to know the actual value of this for the Titans to move back 4 spots in the first for 2 round 3 picks, it comes out to a plus 150 value for the Titans, which is the equivalent of the 88th overall pick, depending on what chart you're looking at, but roughly a mid day 3 pick. The Titans will be picking up an excess value from this trade. So the Titans move back 4 spots and the Cardinals come up and get their guy in Malik Nabers, who is the wide receiver 1 for a number of teams, may very well be their wide receiver 1 and could be the reason why they move down from 4 and not take Marvin Harrison Jr. necessarily. Then you get to 8. And this is the part, Derek in the comments saying, thanks, I hate it. I'm wondering if this is the portion he is referring to, because you've got the Jacksonville Jaguars making perhaps the biggest splash of the draft, moving up to number 8, swapping picks with the Atlanta Falcons, the Jaguars moving to 8, Atlanta moving back to 17 and picking up the Jaguars second round pick, which is in the 40s. If I remember, I should have written these down in the 47, something like that. So picking up an extra second round pick to move back to number 17, the Falcons are. And the Jaguars come up and make a splash that they so desperately need. Now, I tweeted this out last night that I have a gut feeling the Jaguars are going to be at least trying, working the phones, doing their best to make a splashy, sexy move that fans of the rest of the AFC South are going to be rather annoyed by. And this would be that move, picking up the third of the top three receivers in Roma Dunze, replacing the receiver that they lost in free agency this year, in Calvin Ridley, of course. I think that this is something that they're going to consider. Now, whether it is Roma Dunze or whether it's Brian Thomas Jr. at LSU, who will be more attainable for them at 17, maybe they trade up not quite as far to land that guy, or he falls to them. I think this is the kind of thing that they could do. Trent Baalke and company, they need a win bad, and their offseason so far has been a wreck. And so this would be the kind of face-saving maneuver, at least in the interim, in the short term, not the interim, in the short term, for that organization to have their fans get fired up for the first time in a while. Then we go to the Bears, and they have the first defensive player come off the board at number 9, but it's not Dallas Turner out of Alabama. It's Byron Murphy, the second out of Texas. This is the scuttlebutt recently. The Byron Murphy is a sneak. I think it was Daniel Jeremiah who said on the air, a sneaky top 10 pick this year is Byron Murphy, the interior pass rusher out of Texas. I could see them going with him and shoring up that defense, building a more complete team around a Caleb Williams. And that defense, which ended last year looking impressive and strong, adding a key piece in the middle. Then finally, Joe Alt comes off the board at 10, lower than many expected him to, going to the Jets. They make the smart choice here. I can't tell you how long I sat with my cursor hovered over Joe Alt, Brock Bowers, Joe Alt, Brock Bowers. The Jets doing something dumb here is so within the realm of possibility, it'll make your head spin. They are a team that is desperate and on tilt, and everybody is operating in the short term, so they could make a dumb decision. This would not be that. This would be them actually considering their future, and I would argue killing two birds with one stone. Having a guy, if your two 33-year-old tackles happen to go down, and Joe Alt, who can immediately step in, not to mention compete for snaps in training camp and maybe usurp one of those guys immediately, but at the very least, have a guy to protect Aaron Rodgers that you desperately, desperately need in the fold. So they land Joe Alt. Now, for the next six picks here, the Titans at number 11 land Olumuyua, his full name, Olufashanu, dadgummit, out of Penn State. They land tackle 2, the second of the left tackles, natural left tackles in this draft class. I think this is a fantastic move for them. I would be super, super pleased if they moved back, added day two capital in the third round and landed an Olufashanu. I think it would be a phenomenal trade-off to go from Alt at 7 and nothing else, or Olufashanu plus extra capital in round 3. I'm all for it. I'd make that trade 10 times out of 10. And I think the Titans brass is very, very pleased with the way that they maneuvered here. At 12, Dallas Turner comes off the board. The Broncos have arguably the top edge rusher in this class fall into their lap, and they are very pleased, something that they can start to build around a cornerstone player on the defensive front to pair with their cornerstone player and Pat Surtain in the secondary, start to build up that defense in a division with Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert and Gardner Minshew, of course. And then at 13, the Raiders do the thing that is kind of dumb, and maybe they don't do this. And maybe this is a trap I'm falling into, this idea that every single year we always assume one more quarterback is going to go in the first round than actually does. This, I could be walking right into it here. Genuinely, I could. But I know that that coaching staff in particular has a connection with Michael Penix Jr. They have not so secretly been enamored with him in this process. And you've been hearing things in recent days. Again, this could be a trap. Could be a trap. But you've been hearing things in recent days about how, you know, I'm talking to GMs, Michael Penix Jr., kind of the best kept secret in the league. A lot of teams really like this cat. Think he's a first-round caliber player. Think he's a dog. Did you read his article in the Players Tribune today? That last line where he says the only medical check you need to do on me to see whether or not I'm a good ball player is an EKG. Just check the heart, because I've got the heart to be your guy. Baller line, mic drop move. I could see them pulling the trigger here, because I'm not sure they want to walk into a season with Gardner Minshew as your one. And I'm sure guys like Devontae Adams aren't exactly jazzed by that kind of idea. Michael Penix Jr. throws a relatively catchable ball, threw a lot of deep balls in college. Not the most accurate guy in the world. I would argue less accurate than you think he is. But
a Davante Adams, you just chuck it up and let him go get the ball. That's the kind of guy that I think a Davante Adams would really enjoy catching balls from. And I think it's the kind of thing that could kind of work. I think the Raiders may be uniquely positioned to do that. Then at 14, the Saints will start to fly through these as we get further down the board. Talisa Fuaga out of Oregon State. The Saints address a bad tackle situation they have right now. Trevor Penning, who is he sucks at football. He's not been very good for them. And then Vikings. The other tackle in New Orleans, somebody in the comments can help me out, that we learned this offseason may be injured for the long term, and they may have a problem at two tackles now, and they're going to need to address that. So Talisa Fuaga is the option out of Oregon State, a very good option for them, a guy that can start right away on the left or the right side, in my opinion. Then the Colts make a move, the second move that will piss off Titans fans and Texans fans on Thursday night. They land Brock Bowers. The tight end position has plagued the Colts for a long time now. No more rolling out Mo Alie-Cox as your guy every week. No more hoping Jelani Woods starts to develop into the guy. JT helped me out with it. Ryan Ramczyk. Thank you. That's the tackle in. My nose is very itchy today. That's the tackle in New Orleans who may very well be hurt for the long term. But the Colts land Brock Bowers, and they add another talented weapon for Shane Steichen and Anthony Richardson to play around with. A dangerous thing for the rest of the AFC South, because I think it's a fantastic move for them. And that's right in the honey hole for where I would start to consider a Brock Bowers. I think that is a fair gamble for them. Derek saying this is just get the interactions from Titans fan mock from Easton. No, it's not. These are every single one of these oddities that you're seeing from me are things that I genuinely think could happen. The point is they're not all going to happen, but this is like a showcase mock for all the things I think you could see happen. And I think one of the two of them will, but most of them won't. That makes sense. So that's what we're looking at here. Okay. Troy Fontenot out of Washington goes to Seattle. That is a pick that I think I made in Mockcraft 1.0. I still like it. He's a five position player who can be versatile, and they've got two tackles up there right now who are both young, but one was struggling near the end of the year and one was dealing with injury issues. So if you need him to play outside in a hurry, I think he can. I think he's an underrated tackle in this class. So I like Troy Fontenot for the Seahawks. Moving on to the Falcons at 17, moving down, picking finally after trading with Jacksonville in the top 10. They take Jared Verse. They get the pass rusher that they need. They get a guy that they like a lot. He falls into the lap at 17. And I think the downgrade from a Dallas Turner to a Jared Verse, not that big of one, and they move back and they add a second round pick. I think that's a win for the Atlanta Falcons. Then the Bengals at 18 take Amarius Mims, the sixth of the top six tackles in this class. A luxury pick for them. They're just going for the biggest tackle room that man or God has ever seen, and they add him to the towering room of the Browns. They've got Trent Brown and the other Brown, whatever his name is. They've got a phenomenal developmental tackle who could, within a year, become the guy. And in a pinch, if you needed him to play this year, I think that he could. Quinyon Mitchell, the first corner off the board to the LA Rams, not addressing the defensive line or the edge position like a lot of folks want to with the departure of Aaron Donald. I understand that, but I think a Quinyon Mitchell to the Rams is absolutely a cornerback. And in this case, a Quinyon Mitchell to the Rams is a real possibility, as they could use some help on the perimeter to bolster some younger guys up front, trying to get their job done, make their job a little bit easier, give them some more time to get home to the quarterback. At number 20, Graham Barton out of Duke goes to the Steelers. He's a college tackle who's likely to play the interior of the offensive line. The Steelers need help across their offensive line. And I think that people distracting me in the comments here, Kenneth saying that I'm jinxing. Maybe I may very well be jinxing it. We'll see. I'll go through some of these comments from you guys here in a second before we get to the last portion of today's show. So don't worry if you're wanting me to read these. I can't read and talk at the same time. It helps to have a producer or a co-host to do that. So I apologize. Graham Barton, I think, would be a phenomenal option for the Steelers and for Arthur Smith and company to start to figure out that offense and build in the trenches. I think that's a wise, prudent decision by the Steelers. And then here come the 49ers, who have traded another trade. I had five total trades in this first round mock. The 49ers come up to 21 with the Miami Dolphins, and they make a selection of Brian Thomas Jr. They add a big and fast perimeter receiver, the fourth receiver off the board out of LSU. Now, why would the 49ers do that? Why would they? They've already got Debo, and they've got Kittle and Ayuk, and they've got CMC. Why do they need another weapon? Maybe we'll see in just a second. You may be guessing what I'm alluding to, but they move up here and they burn one of their two first round picks to move up with the Miami Dolphins in exchange for some day two capital. Moving on here, we've got the Eagles at 22 going with Cooper DeJean falling into their lap. They desperately need a cornerback. Their cornerback room has gone from really, really strong and veteran savvy to a nursing home in the past couple of years, and they need a guy. And this great white hope, Cooper DeJean, who is a white guy playing corner in 2024, I know he's going to be, he can play corner. I promise. You don't have to move him to safety just because he's white. I promise he can, and I think that he gets a chance to do so in Philadelphia, where they need badly in the secondary. The Cardinals, with their second first-round pick, have Laiatu Latu fall into their lap. The guy that I think is the best edge rusher in this class on pure talent alone. He's a monster. He's a Tasmanian devil out there. But he also retired from football a couple of years ago and thought that he would never be able to play again because of a neck, back, spinal situation. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. But it was a spinal deal, and he ultimately ended up coming back. Now, the soft word so far, and we'll probably hear more on this in the next 48 hours, on Laiatu Latu's medical status is the NFL's generally okay with it. Like, the teams are like, okay, this checks out. I think we're happy with him, and we're willing to, he's not undraftable because of his medicals. But I think he has a crazy wide range of outcomes. I think he could be a top 15 pick easily. I think he could also be like a mid second day pick because of those medicals and teams just not wanting to touch it with a 10-foot pole. So where he ultimately goes, I don't know. Had him go in the 20s here to the Cardinals. At 24, the Cowboys go with Terrion Arnold. The second cornerback comes off the board. They get a big boy to replace the loss of Stephon Gilmore in free agency and to play opposite a Trayvon Diggs, who's coming off of a major lower body injury last year. So that's a big boost to their defense. Fills a big need for them. The Packers go with Tyler Guyton, the seventh tackle in this class out of Oklahoma. They are a patient bunch, and they are in need of tackle, and he's the kind of guy you're going to need to be a little patient with, but I think can come in and be a valuable starter for you down the line. So that's Tyler Guyton to the Packers at 25. At 26, Jackson Powers Johnson goes to the Bucs. There's been a decent amount of smoke in the past couple of weeks that the Buccaneers are interested in the center position. They feel like they are in need of the center position. And I think Jackson Powers Johnson, ever since I saw him at the Senior Bowl, he's built like SpongeBob. He's built kind of funny, but he's a monster of a man, and he is a monster in the trenches. I think he's absolutely a first-round caliber player, and so I have him as the first center off the board to the Buccaneers at 26. And then the last slide here, I think Johnny Newton's going the first round. The Illinois product, the mauler in the middle of the defensive line, a defensive lineman that goes to the Cardinals in this instance, their third first round pick by way of their trade out of four and picking up an extra first from the Vikings. They already had two to begin with, but they add a third here and they go with Johnny Newton out of Illinois. They need guys to rush the passer, and they added one with their second pick on the edge. They're going to add one in the middle now. And this defense, the defensive front, at least, is going to have some teeth to it. And that's big for Jonathan Gannon's system down there as a defensive coach. He's loving it with those two picks. Darius Robinson, a big guy that I was talking to Teron Davenport and Paul Karski today after our press conference, saying, I asked him, who's the guy? If you don't think he's falling to 38, but if he did, you are jumping up and down, screaming, pounding the table, stepping on the table, ripping your clothes off, saying, draft this guy. Our unanimous answer was Darius Robinson out of Missouri, because he is the Danico Autry replacement. We talked about it on the Do and Do Not Draft guide earlier this week. He would be a perfect fit as Danico Autry replacement, but he does not fall that far, as I don't think that he will. I think this is the range he will go in when we get to the draft. He goes to the 49ers, who I'm sure they're not crazy about the guys they currently have to replace Arik Armstead. So I think he's the guy you bring in. He's got the inside outside versatility. You feel good about your defensive front with Darius Robinson in the fold. Kool-Aid McKinstry gets into the first round, goes to the Lions. They just lost their cornerback to Cam Sutton. Is that his name? Right? Yeah. I'm not tripping on that. I think Cam Sutton, they lose him, and they replace him with Kool-Aid McKinstry. He gets to play alongside Brian Branch, his former Alabama teammate, and the secondary has some teeth to it. At 30, the Ravens desperately need a tackle. And the first seven are already off the board here. This is, a cautionary tale here in terms of the Titans waiting to draft tackle. In my mock here, I don't think this part of my mock is unrealistic. The idea that we could have an eighth tackle go off the board in the first round, or, in the first 35 pick, the first 37 picks right before the Titans at 38. Very possible. And in this case, Patrick Paul out of Houston goes much higher than some folks expect him to. We saw on his social media earlier this week, he's very confident he's going in this range. He said, the NFL, their boards are different from the mock drafts. Y'all going to see on Thursday, late Thursday evening, I'm going to be going to a team. And in this case, I think he's right. I think that he is a guy that teams at the end of the first round, top of the second round, are going to be considering, built in a lab to play a tackle, developmental prospect, but get the right coach on him. In Baltimore, they're the kind of team that would be confident they can make the most out of Patrick Paul, and they desperately need some tackle help. So they go with the Houston product. At 31, Jordan Morgan out of Arizona goes to the Dolphins, who traded back with San Francisco to the 31st overall pick. And this is where they make their selection of a tackle in college who's going to play on the interior in the NFL, and they need interior help down there in Miami. So that is what they do there. And then at 32, the Chiefs make their selection of Adonai Mitchell, a guy that I think is fool's gold a little bit, bad news for most teams that draft him. I think the perfect place he could go to is the Chiefs, and I think that they would inevitably get the most out of him, which may be like a receiver that we look back on and say, how did we let Adonai Mitchell fall to the Chiefs at 32? What were we thinking? It's because he went to the Chiefs that he turned out to be the best that he could possibly be, and the best that he can possibly be in terms of his measurements and his athleticism and his big game ability. It's a very good player. So that's bad news for the rest of the league, but good news for the Chiefs. Now, the last thing I have to say before we get to the Titans second round portion of this and we get out of here is that, I don't know if you noticed, there's a team that has a first round pick as of right this moment that didn't make a pick here. It's the Buffalo Bills. Where were they? Oh, remember the 49ers who moved up? They moved up, drafted early in the 20s, and then look right here. They drafted again at 28. What happened there? This is some smoke we've seen today. The idea that the 49ers could potentially be moving off of Brandon Ayuk, trading him for the right price. I think the right price is a late first round, second round pick based on the wide receiver market we've seen so far. He needs a big fat contract. Can the 49ers shoulder the burden in terms of cap of a Ayuk and Debo deal? Yes. And a CMC deal? Yes, they can. As long as Brock Purdy is still in his rookie contract, they absolutely can. But in terms of wanting to spend the cash and wanting to manage the cap in that way, are they willing to? Until the deal gets done, it's not done. And we've seen, Titans fans know good and well, when you get a receiver that is a star going into the draft and he's not locked down yet, anything can happen. And so the Buffalo Bills trade their first round pick straight up, maybe a little bit of the trade details. If you had to throw a little 2025 cheddar, fourth round pick in there, fifth round pick, you make it happen. And they add an expensive, but young and incredibly talented outside receiver with some real juice for Josh Allen to throw to. And the Buffalo Bills replace Stephon Diggs with a younger, just as expensive version that I think that they Bills fans will be very, very pleased with. So that is my mock draft 2.0. There will be an article written up about all of those things I just explained to you on Broadway Sports Media's website tomorrow morning. So check that out. Love the clicks. Love for you all to tune in and read what more I wrote about them than what I had to say today. Last part we have to get to is the Titans 7-round mock situation. But first, I want to dig into some of y'all's tweets here. Replies in the comments here. JT saying this is peak cinema. Derek appreciating the content while he's at the gym. Derek, appreciate having you in here. Hawkins asking, didn't Rand say something about LSU when talking about elite playmakers? Today? I don't believe so. I could have missed that part, but I'd imagine he was thinking it because they were, you know, him and Brian were both down there at the pro day. There's no doubt that objectively they've got some, people are just blowing my phone up. I'm trying to do a show here, people. That they were both down there and they see these guys as explosive players. And so if he wasn't saying it, he was certainly thinking it. Hawkins, JT saying, did he think you were thinking he was thinking that you were, okay, shut up, JT. Just being annoying, frankly. What else in here? Anything else? People reacting to the mock saying that it's clickbait. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Hawkins saying, not terrible. I would have liked two of their first round picks. Because Cardinals have three. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure you would have liked that, but in terms of a value situation, moving up four spots, you're not going to get two firsts out of that unless you send significant capital back. That's just the reality of the situation. So I'd like it too, don't get me wrong. I just don't think that's going to be a possibility here. Derek saying, get fashion at this point if you let all the better talent get away at wide receiver and tackle. I think he was saying that when we're getting to the Titans pick, and I did it, so you're welcome. Hawkins, bro, the Colts with Bowers is a scary thought. They cannot get him. Yes, they can get him. I think that they will end up with one of Terry Arnold, Quinion Mitchell, or Brock Bowers. I think that that's who the Colts will be taking away from this draft. I like all three players a lot, and it's going to be a bummer no matter what if you're a Titans fan for them to come away with one of those big guys. You just got to remember that the Titans are going to come away with a guy that the Colts fans are probably not all that fond of either because they have a top 15 pick as well. They're going to get a good player as well. So it's a two-way street there. A name, not a fan of Olu at all. I rather have Fontenot His run blocking is terrible, and I just don't see this supposed amazing pass blocker. I agree with you that his pass or his run blocking is not great. It's below average, but that's the kind of thing that you can teach up and teach up quickly in the NFL, and a guy like Bill Callahan, I think, is absolutely capable of it. I'm going to have to really strongly, respectfully disagree with you on him being an amazing pass block, not being an amazing pass blocker. He is. He's the best pass blocker of these tackles, pretty explicitly to me. He's a monster. He's so nimble. His footwork is incredible. He's gliding across the field. He's got much more strength in him than Joe Alt does. I think that he's the best pass blocker with the bullet. So I am a fan of Olu. The last thing I'll agree with you on here, criticism sandwich, positive, negative, positive here. The positive I'll end on is you say you'd rather have Fontenot. I have no problem with Troy Fontenot. In fact, I was talking today to Teron Davenport about how I think that Troy Fontenot is an underrated player in this draft process. I think that he's somebody that I would love to see on any team, but the Titans in particular. He's got incredible movement skills, the best mover, the best footwork of these tackles. That's his superlative. And he's got not any other super sexy traits to him. He's not a mauler. He's not incredible in pass blocking or in the run game in particular. He's not crazy strong like a J.C. Latham is, but he's like a B+, A-. In every single thing, he's just solid, and he looks like a pro on tape. So I would have no issue with that at all if that's what ends up happening. A-Name saying he's good, but he gets pushed back off the quarterback too often for me. Still going in on Olu there. And then Ethan says, late to the party, but I can see what folks are talking about. J.C. Latham at 5 feels like an impossible domino to fall to allow a lot of this to fall the way that it does. I wouldn't say impossible, but I'd say it's unlikely, but certainly like, again, the Chargers, whether it's at 5 or at 11, wherever they trade to, I think that J.C. Latham is probably the top tackle on their board. Maybe on Thursday I'll be proven wrong, but I don't think that's going to be the case. And then Kenneth saying, oh, good, Easton went tackle in his mock draft. Look, lock in those receivers to the Titans' bets. Maybe, perhaps. Anything else here? Derek saying the Great White Hope going to Philadelphia would break my heart. Ethan, I feel like it's so risky that only a team like the 49ers or Chiefs would take Latu in the first, but like you said, folks don't seem too concerned based on the media reports. Yeah, it's all based on the medical. I think if teams clear him and are confident, they're going to feel like whoever gets him, they've got the best edge rusher in this class. And from a talent standpoint, I can't really disagree with them on that. Top Tier saying, I would hate if the Titans traded off of Neighbors at 7. I think that they are not going to do that, as we talked about earlier in the show. And in this case, they did not, but I understand that you are heard on that front. Derek asking if the Dolphins are still allowed to have a first. Yes, they forfeited their first last year. They forfeit a later round pick in this draft, I believe. Chef Rand saying two-thirds ain't enough to pass a Malik Neighbors. Failure. Chef Rand, you weren't paying attention. The Titans didn't take two-thirds to pass a Malik Neighbors. Malik Neighbors was already off the board, big dog, so that's not what happened here. And then Derek saying, then they aren't getting 7 if we're sitting on the potential of Neighbors, Odunze, or Alt. I'm not sure what that's in reference to, but we'll move on. Deagle saying he's not a fan of Brinker. Why, Deagle? What do you know about Brinker to have anything against him? That's my question. Okay, let's talk briefly about the Titan 7 round mock here. And here it is. If you're watching on YouTube, I've pulled it up here. Very fancy formatting. I typed it into Word, but here it is, a screenshot for you of, in this instance, what the Titan 7 round mock would look like. And while I think it's unlikely they'll have this many picks ultimately in the draft, I do think a lot of these guys are firmly on potential future, soon to be future Titans watch for a couple of reasons. Olu Fashanu at the top, we already talked about. They land their cornerstone left tackle. Big move, great first round pick. Second round, I talked earlier this week about how Junior Colson is a very, very strong possibility for the Titans at 38. And listening to Dane Brugler on the Athletic podcast earlier this week talk about how he sees Junior Colson as, with a bullet, the best linebacker in a bad linebacker class, one of the only guys capable of being a green dot guy on day one. Not any super, super sexy elements to his game, but really, really well-rounded. I think that Junior had a visit with the Titan. Here's the other thing, guys. A lot of these guys that I'm about to pick here, 4 of them in particular, not a lot, but 4, have met with the Titans already. They had 30 visits, or they had local visits, or they had Skype visits. And last year, I believe it was every pick the Titans made outside of their first-round pick of Peter Skoronski was a guy they visited with pre-draft. Now, does that mean that's going to happen again this year? No, not necessarily. But I think that there may be some signal to that, and that may be something that turns out to be true, that a number of their choices are guys they met with. So we'll see if that pans out, but it's certainly something. It may be not much, but it's not nothing. And so Junior Colson to the Titans at 38, some will see it as a significant overdraft. I do not. I think that it is. I think that Junior Colson is the best linebacker in this class, and I think the scarcity of the position in this class. You take him at 38 and you're happy with it. At 66, they take Rook Orihohoro out of Clemson, one of our favorite on the Hot Read podcast, one of our favorite maulers on the defensive line, a guy that is in our do draft portion of the do and don't draft guy for the Tennessee Titans on BroadwaySportsMedia.com. Our JT and I's article going through each round and each guy at each position. He's a guy that we would love for the Titans to draft, and to get him in the third would be a phenomenal, phenomenal value. I think that he would be a great pairing with Jeffrey Simmons. Malik Washington, wide receiver out of Virginia. Titans have not met with him or Rook, but if you got Malik with a third round pick in the 90s, I think back to last year and how post draft during the Vrabel kind of kerfuffle in the media, the idea that maybe Vrabel and Rand don't see eye to eye and then some things get leaked. It was somewhat reliably shared with us in the media that Rand Carthon on draft day last year in the first round, he was kind of team Zay Flowers, who Boston College wide receiver who ultimately ended up going to Baltimore. And then they, you know, whether it was Vrabel who made the decision or the whole room voted, they ended up going with Peter Skoronski at 11, but that's the kind of guy that Rand was interested in. When I watch Malik Washington's game, it's kind of a poor man's Zay Flowers. I wrote about him in our Do and Don't Draft article. He's the kind of guy that, first of all, he was the entirety of Virginia's offense last year. He's got that spark plug, spitfire is probably the right word for it, out there in the secondary. Once he's got the ball in his hands, he's a real problem for you. He's short, he's wiry, but he's going to get after it and run around you. I like Malik Washington a lot, and he would be a fantastic late day two option. At 4.1 of the 106th pick in the fourth round, the Titans take Jarvis Brownlee Jr., one of my favorite cornerbacks in this class, out of Louisville. He is a guy the Titans have met with. They did a 30 visit with Jarvis Brownlee Jr. Tenacious defender. Would be a great fourth option to add to the Titans cornerback room. Plays bigger, stronger, faster than he looks and than he should. A serviceable athlete. I like Jarvis a lot. You've heard us talk about him on the show before. Jalix Hunt is a guy I don't think we've mentioned on this show one time, but the Titans did meet with him. The edge player out of Houston Baptist. I have them taking him in the fifth round here. He's the kind of guy that when you see him pop up on the visit sheet, you perk up. They're meeting with a Houston Baptist kid at a position of need. I wouldn't be shocked at all if they like a Jalix Hunt. I like a Jalix Hunt. I think that he would be a phenomenal value in the fifth round. And I think that he has the size and athleticism, the raw traits to develop into a rotational edge rusher in the right system and under the right circumstances. And then some dart throws here at the end. Sixth rounder, Rasheen Ali, running back out of Marshall, the Marshall Thundering Herd in the sixth round at 182 overall. He's a guy the Titans have also met with, a running back out of Marshall. They're meeting with him. They've met with a handful of running backs, I think three in this process. There's some signal there. I think they're interested in a running back, and a Rasheen Ali in the late rounds might be the guy they're after. Kingsley Egwukon, the Eggman, center out of Florida, a guy I talked about on our Do and Don't Draft episode earlier this week at 7.242. He is a center who I think has more ability than he showed in his last year, was fighting through a preseason ankle injury and was never at 100% his entire season, was not able to participate a whole lot in the pre-draft process, but looked really strong at the Senior Bowl and looked like he was trending in the right direction in his 2022 tape as a junior, I'd imagine. So Kingsley Egwukon as an interior depth guy, and then a tackle depth guy in Ethan Driscoll. Two Marshall Thundering Herd play. What is a Marshall Thundering? Are you a Buffalo, I guess, or a herd thunderer out of Marshall? Whatever you are, the Titans get two of them in this mock draft. They land Ethan Driscoll, a super raw, but super, super big, super long, super traitsy tackle out of Marshall with their final pick at 252. So they come out of the draft with two tackles, a linebacker, a defensive lineman, a wide receiver, a cornerback, an edge, a running back in the center. I mean, just kind of addressing everything across the board. This would be a draft that I would be super stoked about. And I think, again, not all of these guys are going to be drafted, but I'd wager at least one of these guys in 5 days is wearing two-tone blue and doing a promotional shoot. I think that there's a decent chance that one of these guys ultimately is a Tennessee Titan. Which one it is, we'll have to see. And that is it for the Hot Read podcast and our pre-draft coverage. It feels great to be done. It feels great to have you all here with me. Thank you for listening to me ramble by myself for the last hour and 9 minutes. I appreciate you guys more than you know. I hope that it was somewhat entertaining, and thanks for engaging with me in the comments. It means a lot, makes my life a whole lot easier and enjoyable when I'm sitting here in this room talking to a computer screen. So we'll be back on Thursday. And Friday night, JT back from the dead, hoping, fingers crossed. Everybody pray for JT to get healthy in a hurry so that we can do this draft show together and react to the first, second, and third round with you all night, Thursday night and Friday night with the studio setup. It's going to be a great time. We'll see. You know, the last two drafts, the Titans have given us fireworks. I mean, fireworks. Trading Treylon Burks, going to get Malik Willis, going with Peter Skoronski in the first last year, and then landing Will Levis at 33, trading up for Will Levis. Like, it's been a time. Let's see if the Titans have a third trick up their sleeve, a third act to their draft night shenanigans, and we'll be able to react to all of it live on Thursday and Friday. Until then, I'm your host, Easton Freeze. This has been the Hot Read Podcast. Hot Read Podcast live, draft night, Thursday. Be there. Talk to you then.